say her?
Oh, Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee Sutton?
Yes.
We have a quorum, was the meeting notice posted as required?
Yes.
And the... Oh, I shouldn't, yes, I'm eating breakfast. My excuse is the traffic this morning. I guess I need to look in here. The first item on our agenda is approval of previous minutes. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Yes.
I said second.
Trustee Hill?
Oh.
Oh, I meant second, second.
Okay.
Second, second.
I thought that was interrogative.
I'm second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Sutton?
Yes.
Okay. We have a number of reports, starting with Dr. Westbrook's. Is Dr. Westbrook's here?
Yes, she is. She stepped in, I saw her.
She's here. On her way right now, okay. Dr. Johnson, are you ready to kick off things for us today then?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
Our report for our head count as of January 23rd, 2009 is in your booklet. Our next report will be on February 7th, and our final report would be on the 19th of February. Our major concerns clearly is the total enrollment. We're off, as you can see listed in red, of approximately 137 students, and the non-validation is off. And again, we hope that this number is going to be reduced, reflective in the next reports on the 7th, the 14th, and our final report on the 19th.
Any questions? And how about applications for the next year?
Applications in the fall?
Mm-hmm.
Applications are down slightly, but we expect that to pick up in the next month or so.
You have any sense why things are down, or?
I'm not really sure. I'm not sure the cycle at this particular point, or it just could be a reflection of the state of the economy in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Law, did you have a comment to make?
Actually, we are down, but we're backlogged, so all the applications aren't in the system yet. So once we catch up, I think we'll at least be even with the same time last year.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
I should add the major focus would be on enrollment planning. And Dr. Johnson is well on the way with addressing that, and that will be reported out. The plan itself
okay.
will be reported out to the academic committee and the board at the appropriate time.
Mm-hmm.
But that really is where our energy is right now. Making sure that enrollment remains number one as a way of generating the support financially
mm-hmm.
and serving larger numbers of students. I think the board would be very pleased with that report.
And do you anticipate that we will have that report at our next meeting?
Yes.
We can. We certainly can.
Mm-hmm.
I have it now, but we don't want to talk about it now.
That's great.
But yes, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as you're ready to talk about it, everybody will listen because there's a little bit more important.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great. Any other? Anything else to report that you
That's
want
it.
To share with us?
That's
okay.
It. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Westbrook's?
Again, I apologize.
No, we just were on a roll and decided.
I thought I had time to slip to the ladies' room. Okay, I'd like to begin again with good morning, and just to provide you some updates regarding the accreditations. As you know, we submitted a self-study for the music program back in January 2008. We had an accreditation site visit February 24th, 25th, and 26th. As a result of that site visit, we received notification of the decision of the accrediting body December 19, 2008. According to the report, we have maintained our status of being fully accredited. However, it is under review. The commission has asked us to respond to some questions, and the response report is due October 1. And the final decision will be made regarding our status at one of the November 2009 meetings by the commission. The faculty are working feverishly. Already I have received a first draft of the responses to some of the concerns that were raised by the accrediting body. I anticipate there will be further revisions, and I will be meeting with not only the faculty, but also the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, as well as the chair. Any questions?
You anticipate that there's anything in their report that's going to, when they make their, let me just back up and ask another question first. When they make their decision on our status, is it possible that they would not renew?
Yes.
Okay. And do you anticipate, what are the most serious things in that report that you think may be difficult for us to respond to?
I think it's the design of the program and not having sufficient students to support such a design.
Okay.
So basically low enrollment. And of course, there are some other issues, questions such as the financial support from the university. There are some issues regarding the facilities to house such a program, antiquated equipment, space issues. But those are the prominent ones.
Well, it sounds like there are some challenges there.
Very much so.
Addressing them.
And it's not uncommon when accrediting bodies, they do make recommendations. And this is my first with this particular accrediting body. And I think that we must seriously look at those recommendations regarding maybe eliminating portions of our program and just offering a BA in music.
Okay, well, we will look forward to seeing what all the review and discussion comes up with.
Okay. I have some good news. New program approvals. At the January 27, 2009 meeting, the Illinois Board of Higher Education approved our BS in International Studies program. No questions were raised, no concerns were raised, so I was really excited to hear that news. So now, of course, the challenge for us will be to recruit students because we plan to begin offering the program effective fall 2009. I think the thing that will help us, we currently offer a minor in international studies, so we're hoping that somehow we can tap into that population as well as recruit new students to the program. No additional dollars were requested, so we think that we can manage with the faculty that we currently have. And to be honest with you, I think if we had asked for money, we probably would not have had the program approved. IVHE is not aggressively approving programs that require additional funding.
Great, well, congratulations.
So that everyone else knows, the program for international studies is housed in the College of Arts and Sciences. I failed to mention that. And it's offered out of the Department of History, Philosophy, and Political Science. The admissions criteria, I think at one of our last board meetings, there were questions about the model that we anticipate using for the fall term. So I thought it was appropriate after having discussions with President Polk, that we would provide you with like a 5 or 10 minute, like an overview, so that we would all be informed about the process we plan to implement effective fall.
That would be great.
So is it okay to do it now, or do you want me to conclude with my report first and then?
No, why don't we go ahead? If this is when you planned it, that's fine.
Dr. Miari, from Institutional Research, he's the Associate Vice President.
Great.
As well as Garth Lingo, who is the Associate Director.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chairwoman. I have just background explanation before we go into the actual.
Okay, great.
And I'd say some time ago, we have started on behalf of the president and at the behest of the provost to examine our admission criteria and suggest alternative approaches. As you know, there is no perfect criterion as such for admission. We talked to different constituencies, including the Faculty Committee on Academic Standards, who made great contribution. I would like to thank Dr. Block, the chairman of this committee, and through him, members of his committee for their remarks and feedback. And we looked into many factors and variables which we and others thought may affect admissions. Finally, we had to be content with those variables which met three criteria. Number one, availability. A variable which affects admission has to be examined, has to be available. For example, we looked at something called the high school feedback rank, and it's a great predictor of student successes, but it's not always available because some schools stopped generating the score, so we had to drop it. And measure number two is that the variable has to be measurable, has to be able to measure it. And number three is the standardization. You look at variable which can be standardized across all groups of students. And so we considered others, but we finally had to be content with two most obvious ones, namely ACT and its equivalent, which means if someone submits SAT, for example, it can automatically be converted in ACT and entered into the equation. And of course, the high school GPA, which we all know is not perfect. I mean, for example, 3.5 GPA at Whitney Young or Carl Sandburg means completely something different from other schools without naming. But nevertheless, taking that imperfection into consideration, we run great many analysis in our data. And so understanding that, we proceeded to delineate the best possible fit between those two scores which produce academic equivalency. And I'll explain what I mean by academic equivalency when we talk about the model. And so what we came up with is instead of a fixed matrix with a specific variety of ACT scores and corresponding high school GPA scores, we came up with a dynamic model which creates a single score upon which admission decisions can be rendered. I was hoping that I could control this from there, but I guess I could, you know, I have to move this because I want to show you the model and how it looks. And so the model that we're going to present is a compensatory one. In other words, you will see the interaction between the ACT and the GPA, how it changes as we go along. And it's a dynamic one in that it's not fixed thing. It can be controlled based upon the score which the university determines is fit to for admission. The formula, can you do that? You want to distribute that? Sure. So very far to see.
Thank you.
The formula which creates the score is based on the ACT
by 25 basis points, as you can see, so that ACT of 36, once weighted, becomes score 45, and the GPA weighted by a multiple of 10, so GPA of 4 becomes 40, a perfect score becomes a total of 85. From this, we would put these scores for demonstration purposes, like 45, 47 and a half. And there is the reason why we use 47 and a half. Because right now, as you can see, that right now, 47 and a half corresponds to what we are, let's say our current admission standard is 18 ACT and 2.5. Based on the current admission practice, those people above and below are not really admitted. I'm going to put the UC admission and the honors aside. I'm going to concentrate on the regular admission for demonstration purposes so you can understand where this went. This model says that all these people, except the 15, that's what the note says, except the ACT 15, will be admissible as regular students, because what we are really saying, based on zillion amount of analysis, that those scores are equivalent. In other words, the 17 with a 2.63 GPA is not less university ready, academically ready, than the 18 and 2.5. Similarly, the 20 and the 2.25. So those are academically equivalent. That's what I meant earlier when I talked about equivalence. They are equivalent, and so they have what it means that they have equal chance. That's what I'm saying. They have equal chance at success and retention.
So can I just restate this just to make sure I'm following? So for each of these potential ACT scores, what's in the regular admission column is the grade point average that would enable a person with that specific ACT to be admitted to the university.
Mm-hmm. Right, but what I'm saying is that this equation can be built into the database so that admissions, once they enter the data, meaning the ACT score and the GPA, that the system will delineate a score, and so the university can, at any time during the admission process, generate a report which shows, you know, frequency of how many students with what applicants with what scores we have, and then determine, this is the other thing, this is the dynamic thing, they can determine what score we like to admit students at certain level. This can be moved later on if we, I mean, this is great help for enrollment management. Enrollment, you know, if you want to manage your enrollment, here's what happens. You decide that you are equipped to handle, say, 500 freshmen. You want to admit 500 students. So you come in mid-December, you get a report about the characteristics or the score, basically, of your application. And you look and you say you have 1,500 students or 2,000 students who have scored 47, 48 above, regardless of how the combination gets here. And then you say, okay, I'm gonna generate admission letters to those people who have a score of 48 or 49 or whatever. This, by the way, this score is determined by the president, because what we're doing here is providing an instrument, a vehicle. The policy is determined by the president and Dr. Johnson and the provost. So they determine where to admit and how many to admit. So you send out admission letters and you ask them to respond by certain date with certain financial commitment. So by April, for example, you know that you have commitment from 300 or 400 students to come in, but you still need another 100 students. What you do, instead of, we used to do second level, which should take a an enormous amount of time. What you do is you look at again at your, we have another 500 who scored between 47 and 48. Let's send them. That's what other schools say, you are on the waiting list. It creates some kind of virtual waiting list for you to use if you want to complement your admission. This way, by September, you already know really how many students you're going to have. Instead of staying until October to really figure out, guessing, to figure out how many students you admit. Not only that, this board, if you see, can, if you change it, I want you to watch what happens when you change. Let's say 1 year you had a great pool of applicants with great scores, and you really want to, I don't want to use the word raise the bar, but you want to look for different students. All you need to do is you do, let's say you want to make it 50. Look what happened here. It's dramatic changes. Mm-hmm. Now, some people may say, this is the same group, but it really it's not. Because mm-hmm. when you go in the area of 47 and a half, and you look at the 16 with the 2.63 GPA or whatever, you have more people, but it's, when you look at the score of 50, when you look at the score of 16, then you have GPA 3 required to be admitted. Then you're talking about very, very few students in reality who have GPA of 3.0 and go and get 16. You're talking about the very few students that really had a bad day during their ACT days. So what you really end up doing, you are shifting, in essence, your population downward without saying anything. So the bulk of your students, they come from here. Mm-hmm. And less of them from others. Mm-hmm. Unlike when you have it at 47 and a half. Mm-hmm. Let me see what else I can say. So I said it's very easy to administer because it could be incorporated into our database. The other thing is also very for expansion, for change. Suppose the university decides they want to give credit for lifetime experience.
Incorporate other factors.
You can incorporate and say, I want to make another point here for life experience. And that would be incorporated into your score.
Okay. I want to ask a couple questions about the policy. Is our current admissions policy 40 for the University College, 47.5 and 60? Is that that's what we're currently using?
Well, we don't use 47.5. We use the 18 and 2.5.
So this has not been implemented. This is a concept.
This is what has been established for the future. It's not going on.
And is it the intention to go ahead and adopt this?
It's already been adopted.
It's been adopted.
Yeah, in December.
Yeah.
Isn't that what I just, so what is the standard for admission?
What's the
combined score?
18 and 2.5.
Mm-hmm. And so these, sometimes they require special handling, somebody spot them in the file, what's wrong with this 22, blah, blah, blah. And so sometimes, my understanding, some permissions are given for those, but as I said, the model.
Okay, so if somebody applied and had a 2.75 and a 16 ACT, they would not be admitted today. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so when you say the model is available, but the policy has not been implemented.
The model is available and will be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
As an outgrowth of board action, that's our last
December.
Last meeting, December.
Yeah.
I think as Dr. Westbrooks pointed out, what we wanted to do was to just briefly discuss the model and look at the flexibility that's built into the model now that was not in the model in the past, that would give more students an opportunity to be successful. And what we wanted to do was just explain it, to play it out.
Okay.
And that's what he's doing.
We just really finished, you know, completed three, you know, that's my model. So I'm on number two. I'm going to say a couple of words about, you know, the testing thing. I said earlier, talking about equal chance for success. This thing, none of these scores guarantees success. We're talking about equal chance for success. And we know that student success is not totally, it's not completely, it's only partially so, dependent on
right,
the student.
It's predictive, it's not.
The institution has to do its part. So, but if we're talking about students learning under the same conditions, we argue, based on our analysis, that this person here has equal chance for success as this person that we're admitting, and that this person that we're not admitting. They're those people here. They have equal chance for success, which if you ask me to define it, I would say it's student eligibility. I underline that, eligibility to re-enroll as a regular student. In other words, if somebody has an academic, you know, is put in academic probation after 1 year, we not count that. We're talking about the student who is eligible to re-enroll second year as a regular enrollment. That's success. And the other measure was retention. We want to see people come back, you know.
So the 1.25, the multipliers and the weighting of these two factors is what came out of your research into the eligibility, if you will,
correct,
to re-enroll of those students.
Correct.
Okay.
That's really what
I got it.
You know, the most like pressing kind of question that we try to answer. Because what you want to balance is between access and academic preparedness, academic, you know, that's
okay.
That's it. On that?
You have it.
Yes, sir. <sure.
laughs>
Mr. Sutton, do you have any questions?
No.
No, thank you very much. Very interesting.
Thank you. I will move to my next item. An intersession update. As you know, we've been piloting the intersession concept for, this is our second, we started in 2006, 2007. But so that we make the comparisons, the current winter session, we had 252 students enrolled in 17 courses. Last year, or in 2006, 2007, there were 27 classes offered, but only 13 made. So, and only 207 students were served. So you can see when we started the pilot, we had 207 students, and now we're up to 252. The thing that's really significant in this is that the majority of the students that actually enroll in classes during intersession, these are seniors. So that tells us that these students, this is the last opportunity for them to try to get a class that they may need so that they can take it during intersession. Then they may take three classes during the spring, and they graduate in May. So we think it's we're moving in the right direction. We will offer the pilot one more time next year. And at that time, I think some decisions will have to be made as to whether we want to continue. And also, given it will be a time where we will be at the table renegotiating a new faculty contract, that may be one of the items that we may wish to re-examine. The honorary degree. Both the honorary degree as well as commencement committees, they have met. Recommendations have been forwarded to Dr. Polk for his consideration. And the recommendations for the distinguished professor is forthcoming. So it is our hope that decisions regarding the selection will be forthcoming as well. Last item is the commencement.
At what point will the board need to act on those?
Well, when the board meets again, March
March.
Fourth?
Mm-hmm. March.
11th.
11th. And of course, our concern actually is that would be very late in the process, because people who are going to either receive an honorary degree or be the speaker or the distinguished professor, but especially the honorary degree, we need to know very early mm-hmm. in the process. So I have the recommendations now, and we may have to figure out a way to get that done before March 4th, so that we can be in touch with people so they can be here. So give me an opportunity to give thought to that as to how we can get that done, and then I'll be in touch with you.
All the board members, most of them will be here February 25th.
Okay.
So that you can do a special on that day.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then we can certainly look there for it, mm-hmm. for that action. That would be very helpful to give us a chance to make those contacts.
Mm-hmm. You might want to consider it, since hopefully we won't have the same reason to have an interim meeting next year as this year, to start that process a little earlier,
yes.
and get it to the board.
Yes.
In the first meeting in,
right.
of the year,
right.
so that there's time to notify people.
And we will be able to do that, and it becomes very important, as you're indicating, primarily because we're moving to two commencements rather than one.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would definitely need to get that those recommendations to mm-hmm. the board earlier.
Okay. And finally, just a reminder about the commencement. The commencement has been approved for Thursday, May 21st, 2009. Commencement will begin at 6 o'clock, but of course the processional always starts about 15 minutes prior to 6. So we'll start the processional around 5:45 and hopefully actually begin the ceremony at 6 p.m. It will be conducted in the email and Patricia A. Jones Convocation Center. Are there any questions?
Well, my question is something that I can get answered outside of this meeting, but I wanted to know who was on the commencement committee this time around.
I would like Dr. Lawrence, would you
yeah.
like to?
Dr. Lawrence, did you hear the question?
Yes, I heard
okay.
the question. We had an executive.
I'm assuming you want to know which students are on it?
Yes, that too.
Speak to me.
Well, my question was, what was the criteria, or what was the rationale for picking X student over another student? Why was the student that currently sits, who currently sits on that committee, why does he serve
the
on that committee?
The process has been in the past, and we may need to look at this in the future, but the process has been that the executive committee members on the committee make recommendations for other committee members to serve on the board, and also for those students, for student representation. It's been my understanding that there's not been, there may not have been a student serving on the committee last year,
mm-hmm.
but we're making an effort to make
there
sure
was.
That
there was.
There was.
Representation.
Traditionally, what I've seen is that a student from Student Government Association would serve
and
on the commencement committee.
Right, and we've asked Dr. Brown to make sure that she gives us
And what has been problematic, given that, you know, students, their studies come first. The commencement committee meets weekly. And sometimes, unfortunately, once it's been scheduled, it may conflict with a class that a student may have. So I think that the committee is working very hard to make certain that the students that are selected, they can actually be present at the time, because I know last year it was problematic. And the student representative, it was a conflict And I believe he was a member of SGA and found it difficult to attend the meetings, and I think it was because of a class conflict.
Trustee Sutton and Trustee Hill, Dr. Lawrence is new to the campus. She's a product of the campus. I mean, she graduated from this, but she is the new executive assistant to the president and co-chair of the commencement committee. And Trustee Sutton, I think the policy or the procedure that works best and one that need to pay attention to is that, frankly, anytime we need student representation, regardless of part-time, full-time, commuter, residence, that we actually consult with SGA. That procedure works best. And when we can't get that kind of input, then we have an alternative to go and try to do it in other ways. But I think the procedure itself should require consultation with SGA, and that's the way we proceed.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
If there are no more questions.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Assem.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay. 20 minutes.
It's a pleasure to report to you. I did submit a written report. I want to highlight a couple of things in the report. We've increased our alumni membership. Our current membership, paid membership, is at 3,150. That's 150 members more than we had this time last year at the close of the report. We have implemented the recommendations that were suggested in terms of amnesty for membership, and so I expect that we will reach our goal of 5,000 members for this year.
You might want to explain that to the rest of the group since they were not privy to our conversation.
Okay. The recommendation was to offer amnesty to individuals who wanted to, and I want to make sure that Dr. Pettis is hearing this well, offer amnesty, in other words, non-paying amnesty to individuals who are not currently members of the Alumni Association who want to join the Alumni Association for a period of time to allow them to become members once we get them in. Then we can begin to work with them in different ways. So basically, that's the concept.
Right, and I don't know that you necessarily want to call it amnesty because it sounds like somebody who hasn't paid their taxes. But that was the concept that came to my mind when we were talking about it.
So. I was hoping that was a conversation that we were going to keep in this room, and that was not the word we were going to use outside.
But the notion is that we really want to, there are so many people who could be members of the Alumni Association, and as I said, and any of us who are in business are thinking about these desperate times call for some desperate measures, and if we haven't been successful about getting people involved, it just seems to make sense to do what we can to really get people involved and on the campus and paying attention to what's going on here, and that a way to do that is just to automatically make them members, and as we would have when they first graduated.
Right.
See if we can get them participating.
We had a very successful 7th Annual Alumni Awards celebration. You got the list of individuals, excuse me, the individuals who were honored. I want to turn my attention to our financial reporting. Income for the period was $1.1 million. We dispersed $888,000. We have disbursed all of the $3.5 million that we received for the CRCP program. For this year, we've disbursed another $1.6 million. We have not received funding from the state yet for this year, though we just got word earlier this week that we will possibly be receiving the first half, which is the 1.75. My expectation is that we will receive the full $3.5 million for the year. We are preparing the documents to send back to the state for this year. But for the first 6 months of the year, we did disburse $1.6 million. In terms of our volunteer activities, we're moving forward. We've prepared a calendar of events for the year. I'll be willing to share the full calendar with you. We're going to have a very active year. I'm very pleased with the way in which things are going. Our Friends of CSU gala was successful by all accounts. To date, we've received a total of $635,000, which is $135,000 more than the $500,000 goal that we set for the gala. So I'm pleased about that. You do see the long list of reports on our news releases in the marketing area. I am very pleased, and I think Dr. Pogue is pleased with the level of marketing that's going on. Nevertheless, marketing requires a sustained funded effort. And as I've said in the past, and as we presented at the last meeting, you get what out of marketing what you invest in it. And so to the extent that we continue to invest in marketing and increase our sustained effort, ideas about how many more students we can bring in and who we can reach out to, how many more alumni we can get, how much more funding we can raise, depends on how well people feel about us and what they think about us out there in the community. And so to the extent that we resource it, and resource it not only from actual funding of activities, but also funding of people who are going to do the job, then we will do a better job. That will conclude my report at this time, unless you have any other questions.
Is there a marketing plan for the year?
Yes, we have a marketing plan. We did present part of it at the last board meeting. Dr. Pogue has seen the marketing plan. Where we are now is to get that marketing plan funded and do the work that it calls for. We have called out of that an advertising plan. We've also called out of it a public relations plan, both of which are different aspects of the plan. I'm excited about the plan, but it's one thing to have a plan and put it on the shelf, and another thing to fund the plan and make it work for you.
Madam Chair, so that we understand the enrollment plan, the marketing plan, and several other plans are growing out of the 10 expectations. The goals are there, and I think either next week or maybe 2 weeks from now, Kate will be presenting to the executive team that particular aspect of advancement that will include marketing, how we're going to go about generating resources for the university. So all of what he's saying, Howard will be talking about the enrollment plan, we always come back to those goals and expectations.
The big goal that we're looking at right now is the sesquicentennial celebration, which occurs in about 8 years, the 150th anniversary celebration. But it's going to take this much time to plan for it and to work towards it. And so unless we begin to put those pieces in place today, we cannot wait until we're 150. You could pull an event together, but event is not going to raise whatever the amount of money is that we intend to raise. That, right. You know, we'll have to work towards it. And everybody in this room has to be committed to it, and we'll have to do some, as you say, you know, special times call for special action. Yeah, so that's what we have to do.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
The next item on our agenda is public and employee comments. Are there any? Anybody wishing to make any comments? There being none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Sutton?
Yes.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.